Scouts of America. You are listening to 90.7 FM WGXC ACRA. ACRA.
Perfect. ACRA. Thank you.
Every Friday on WGXC from noon until 2, check out the Sugar Shack Jukebox featuring decades of funk, R&B, rock, pop, soul, and much more. That's every Friday on WGXC after the noon headlines until 2 p.m.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of WGXC or Waveform.
I like marijuana, you like marijuana, we like marijuana too. A marijuana, 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 marijuana. I like marijuana, but you like marijuana, we like marijuana too. I want to be a hip. To get stoned on marijuana. I want to be a runaway god to leave home for marijuana. Remember the teeny bop sniffing airplane glue? Marijuana. He used to freak out in Central Park Zoo. I got to say goodbye for push, you got to get your high on marijuana. It's my life and I do what I want. Marijuana. It's my life and I do what I can't. Marijuana. I want to smoke pot and I want to smoke a lot. But here comes my father.
Yeah! Hello, Radioland. This is Heather Martin, and you are joining us for the Medical Freedom Show, broadcasting every second Monday, 2 to 3 p.m. And today, I am joined by a returning guest. I'd like to welcome to the show Catherine Dawn Masters. Hello, Catherine. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Heather. Good to be here again.
Welcome. Glad to have you back. So, Catherine, you're a chronic pain survivor, educator, activist. And we were talking before the show about some legislation you're working on.
Yes, I live in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And it was in January that I had seen come over our news, something that our lawmakers were wanting to do. I can't remember exactly what it is. I just remember that I was mortified by it. I knew that if they went the direction that they were going to go, it was going to be very disastrous for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very much aware that a lot of people, including up in government, you know, they don't realize that our true pain specialists mm-hmm. are called anesthesiologists. This is what they go to school
for. I just want to clarify for our listeners that, like, when we're talking about us, if you're a new listener to the show, the Medical Freedom Show is about rights that we don't currently have. We don't have the right of authority over our own bodies when we go through the medical system, by and large. So Catherine has been on the show before, talking on behalf largely of chronic pain patients who are right now the collateral damage in the war on drugs, because the problems going on now, which I see as being directly related to the prohibition laws, to the war on drugs, are having this huge fallout, this big impact on people in chronic pain. And right now, the reality is that most people who suffer chronic pain are unable to get medicine or significant medicine to treat their chronic pain. So when we're talking about how legislation would impact us, we're talking largely about the community in chronic pain and those who suffer chronic illness and need the medicines that are currently getting all the bad press for their quality of life. So I just wanted to clarify that, Catherine. Sorry to jump in.
No, appreciate it. Appreciate it. But the problem for a lot has been that with anesthesiologists being our pain specialists, anesthesiologists are more likely to use the powerhouse pain medicines such as your MS-Contin, mm-hmm. dilated fentanyl, and be able to manage this chronic intractable pain and put people back into a quality of life, back to being able to do things, go to do their job, you know, take care of family, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
with having MDs opening up pain clinics, so many of them only want to do moderate. They're too afraid to use what is created to help severe pain patients.
Mm-hmm.
And so they generally will use a lot of moderate pain relievers, keep throwing, increasing that, throwing at it. Of course, they're mm-hmm. not really getting where they need to be. They're using a whole lot of pain.
Right,
pain
and a reliever. Lot of these moderate medicines have worse side effects than the opiates do at a higher
yeah.
dose. In fact,
well, Tom Petty, if his doctor would have given him MS-Contin morphine to deal with the fracture in his pelvis, I really believe that he would be here today, because he was on a moderate pain reliever. But anyway, mm-hmm. I had been going for having each day any doctor who wanted to go into pain management that the Anesthesiology Society mm-hmm. would create a course for them to go through And once they achieve that course, they get it certified, and they will be under the guidance of the state's anesthesiology company. So that was my presentation to Mike Hunter, our Oklahoma Attorney General's office. And I got an email in April from the Anesthesia Society here in Oklahoma that showed me that they had put a law together stating that any pain management clinic will have an anesthesiologist, a rheumatologist, and a psychiatrist. And that law went into effect May 1st, 2018, which I think is phenomenal. Because, you know, you're going to have your MDs and your PAs also in these clinics. And so people who are needing to get their medicines, the Ativan, the Xanax, whatever they use for the anxiety, are going to be able to go to one clinic, and they're going to have access to those powerhouse medicines that are for chronic intractable pain. And so, and I have even spoken with anesthesiologists and asked them, how do you feel about this law that we have now passed? And I have gotten positive feedback from the anesthesiologists. They think it's great. They agree. They agree with it. And so we're hoping that I've been also sharing this with other states. I'd like to see this happen across the United States, because that our stronger pain medicines aren't as they are being depicted as in the news. We know we've got the substantial knowledge, and also that I wrote in with Purdue Pharmaceutical Company back in 1998. My story, it's what helped broke open the availability and the acknowledgement that people with chronic intractable pain do very well. When they have their pain under control, they become very active in their life.
Yeah, and it improves their health overall.
Yes,
so it's
it
actually, pain medicine isn't just like something that's put over to mask the pain. Well, I mean, it is, but it also has this overall effect of improving the person's health, because they can get more exercise, they can get out and enjoy their life more.
Well, absolutely. And I was in medicine, as you know, and we were taught in medicine that when a person is in pain and is not allowed to, if you're not treating that pain to get them out, one of the first things that starts going down is the immune system. And so you start seeing these problems, autoimmune system problems. And then, of course, we know the cardiac, you know, the pain starts. Well, that's the way that the body's designed. I was talking about this the other day with some people, that the body has all these systems and it goes through these backup. If this doesn't work, it initiates this system. If that doesn't work, it initiates this system. And so it's designed to get the person to get the problem taken care of. And, you know, the doctors know this. You know, they know this. They know that these are problems,
Catherine?
That pain itself it causes. Yes,
I actually want to go back a little bit and clarify for some of our listeners, because, you know, we may have people tuning in who are new to the subject, and I do want to do some clarification about, you know, what are opiates actually? And opiates are some ancient natural medicine that has been with us since the pyramids and the earliest records of human history. And it's being promoted as, you know, should we do natural medicine or opiates? Well, that they're the same thing. We're talking about the sap of a poppy flower. And what's coming into this country right now, this synthetic opioid substance, it's not even the same thing. We're not even talking about the same substance here. And these other medicines that are being pushed instead of real pain medicine, instead of opium-based medicine, are the ones that are doing the liver damage and systemic damage to people. Long-term use of opiates actually can reduce the aging process. I mean, it's not, unless it's used unreasonably, too high, too soon, it's one of the safest medicines long-term for managing ongoing pain.
Yeah, they know that. The medicine knows that, Heather.
But it
they
is, know. It's a common misconception. I often hear people say, well, morphine will destroy your liver. Well, only if it's being mixed with Tylenol, acetaminophen. And a lot of times the prescriptions are mixed with acetaminophen. And, you know, it's something that patients need to be wary of because acetaminophen does cumulative liver damage. So, like, the more you take, the more damage you can set into your liver. And it becomes a misconception. So people think, oh, this person was on pain medicine and then they died of liver damage. Well, they've had a lot of acetaminophen thrown at them as well. And, you know, there's people who have weak livers who are still being denied the pure opiate medicine and being forced into taking this medicine that's going to kill them, that's destroying their livers. And also that the opiates, like you mentioned about how the body is designed, and this medicine works with the human body perfectly. It naturally mimics our own endorphins to reduce pain and to make you feel better. Yes, it actually makes people feel better. And feeling better helps every system of the body. So
well, you feel better. You feel better because you got your pain under control.
Mm-hmm. And it helps in all of the healing process.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely it does. And
so I have another question for you. So we're talking about this bill to bring anesthesiologists into pain management to supervise. Now, is this currently, what stage of the process is this in? Has it been passed into law or is it still bill waiting for approval?
Oh, no. I mean, they got on it within between March and, February, March. They had it put together. February or April, it passed and went into effect on May 1st, 2018. Just over the fact that they did not know what our anesthesiologists were, that they were our pain specialists, and that actually anyone that was any MD that was opening up a clinic and was entitled pain management clinic that was actually committing fraud with it. And we've had, I tell you, one of the MDs, I've had more MDs put my life in jeopardy. And I've even had where that an MD, I battle tumors. I have multiple tumor syndrome and battling damages from surgeries. And I will have to always take pain medicine. And I've even had doctors hand me the MS Contin, which is the one that works very well with me. I'm up, I'm going, I'm very active, and I've handed it back to them because I knew that they did not know what they were really dealing with. That they were more than likely one of these people that if they're going to get a hair up the wrong way. And they're going to jerk that medicine from me, and that's going to put my life in jeopardy. There were so many multiple problems with allowing just MDs to just throw open a pain management clinic and just basically they were just going into it for the money. They were not truly qualified to be a pain management clinic. And I know that this is the reason, this is where we're having so many problems, so many people getting hurt, people that, you know, that were not getting proper pain management. And I've even had, it was an MD's office that even had a PA tell me that, well, he wanted to do nerve blocks in my neck. And I said, No. That's something that a specialized doctor does. Well, if you don't let me, put these nerve blocks in your neck, I'm not going to refill your pain medicine.
Oh, we hear these ultimatums all the time, don't we?
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, there's, on that one right there, the interesting, I'll tell you this, because I, because you know I'm a big promoter on people that if you got an abusive type health professional, you need to report them to the state, because here's what this doctor thought that I did not know. Because he had his PAs run his clinics while he was at the hospital. These PAs were operating like doctors. In the, in this state, a PA must be on the premises in that clinic and looking at every single thing that that PA is wanting to do. But this doctor wasn't. And they were putting my life in dire jeopardy. Either I allow them to do these nerve blocks in my neck, which ran the risk of being paralyzed from the neck down. I didn't want to risk that. I didn't want to take that risk. That wasn't necessary to go that route. Or not going to get my pain medicine. I contacted the state board, licensing board, and then by the third day, they were there with chains and padlocks on the clinic doors. Because they were operating that, facility illegally. They did not have that doctor on the premises, and the abusiveness of what that PA said or wanted, trying to force this upon me. See, people, you know, you don't let people, you don't let these people do whatever they want to with your life. Because right now, we have been, we've been kind of going through the doctors here because of that.
I'm always advising people who have to deal with the medical system to keep records of everything that goes on, have a recording device, just be ready record it all. Because, I mean, even my own experiences with my partner, I mean, we have heard some of the most outrageous statements made. Most recently, I found out that apparently in our state, his condition would qualify as a palliative care situation. And we've been told repeatedly that if you qualify for hospice, you qualify for palliative care. If you don't, then you don't get it. So we get a lot of outright lies lobbed at us. We've had such horrible statements as, if you want pain relief, get cancer. We actually have had a doctor say that. So, I mean, it's one of the reasons that I've gotten into the sort of media work and just speaking out about this, because it tends to be a subject that a lot of times people, I think a lot of times people feel embarrassed about talking about their experiences with doctors. They feel that it could compromise their health care to talk about what they've endured. But I think the more that we talk about it, the more we expose it and bring it to light, the more it becomes an issue that has to be dealt with.
Yeah, you know, if people don't realize just exactly how much power they have by contacting their state medical boards and reporting these people, and especially if these are doctors that work within
and Google reviews. We can do a lot with Google reviews right now, too, I think.
HealthGrades, Vitals.com, you know, whenever there's a doctor that I'm looking into or searching for, I go by that. I check those sites out. I always leave a report, because I tell you, it's become an incredible, powerful tool. Because we just had one with my mother that going to this one pain specialist, and I knew him years ago, and I did not like him. I do not care for his behavior, the way that he thinks about how he treats people. But we were forced, like many of them, to go ahead and give him a try. I seen the review that, you know, that the staff, there was a problem with the staff. And sure enough, we had finally got my mother doing very, very well. And they come in and started stripping things from her and got her into a very serious position. And we got them. I caught them in a lying to me, and all of a sudden, it went from that one. Then it spread to my doctor, to our primary doctor, and we started seeing problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's really something that it's the staff. It's not so much the doctors really anymore, as it is so much of it's the staff. But you're right, there is an insane amount of deception, as if people are not intelligent about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're
being treated like children,
well,
and
you know,
for the most part, being denied direct access to the doctors. I mean, when I talk to people from other countries, like they tell me that, you know, well, in my country, I go right to the doctor and I get treated that day. I see the doctor, I call the doctor answers the phone. Here you see all these staff people months before you ever even get to see the doctor. And, you know, there's definitely evidence that this is a system that doesn't work. Going back, though, to the bill you're talking about in Oklahoma, is there a name of that bill, like, so that if any listeners are interested in doing more research, they could look it up?
Oh, I had it on a... Well, actually, contact the Oklahoma Anesthesiology Society. Talk with Pamela Duncan.
Uh-huh.
And she can get you that bill. It's that's on my other computer that went down. I lost
okay.
It went down back in July, but
okay.
Talk with her. But there's something else that I would like to address, that get the people behind and start thinking about, is that, you know, we need to, along with things, to have it laws that can help protect us, that when a doctor threatens to take away your medicine, that right at that point, that a person can contact the police department and file a complaint against that doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Have them come to the office, because right now your state medical licensing boards are supposed to enforce those laws.
Uh-huh.
But I do not see them doing that.
Yeah.
I think we need to push to have mm-hmm. have it set up where that a police officer can be summoned, because this is your life, this is your well-being.
Mm-hmm.
It is no different than being on the street and somebody threatening
it's
your
violence.
Life right there. Yes, it is.
Let's call it what it is. This is
violence.
Violence.
Yes, it is.
Denying
yes, it
chronic
is.
Pain patients medicine is violence. There.
Yes.
I've said it.
Yes,
I want to get back to this subject, but I do want to ask you a couple more questions about that first bill we were talking about in Oklahoma. Do you know who wrote the bill or how that originated?
Well, like I said, I had contacted the Attorney General's office, because it was through the Attorney General office, along with, I can't remember who else that was there in the news that alongside of him, that they were going to pass these one type of laws, that I knew that, you know, of course, please don't go that route.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go that route. So I went right to the Attorney General's office, and they put me in with the team who is working on this. So I would suggest people to contact the Attorney General office, because they have their team set up to handle these type of calls that come in with information, wanting to help, what you would like to see happen with your state, what
mm-hmm.
laws you'd like to have come about, and also to give. And especially give your story to them.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That is.
Because they are listening. They are needing help. And that's the
mm-hmm.
type of response that I got with them, was that, you know, that they're very thankful to get some people that have this information or have this idea and called in and see what they did. They heard up. I mean, I've never seen a bill get put together and passed so fast in my entire life. And here I am. I'm just a citizen. I'm just like everybody out there who's listening and talking.
So you found... Like you. Oh, I have to let our listeners know that you are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM, your community hands-on radio. This is Heather Martin with the Medical Freedom Show. I'm talking today with Catherine Dawn Masters, a pain patient and activist, and we've been talking about new legislation going through in the state of Oklahoma to have pain management overseen by anesthesiologists, who are the real experts in the field, more so than the MDs, which we hope will ensure that people in chronic pain are going to be getting adequate medicine, because that has not been the case. I want to remind our listeners, you are listening to a live show, so if you have a question for myself or my guest, our call-in line is 518-828-0290. Again, that's 518-828-0290. The Medical Freedom Show broadcasts on the second Monday of every month from 2 to 3 p.m. And we talk about the rights that we currently do not have but are striving for, to have the right of authority to make our own medical decisions and oversee those medical decisions that our doctors make, so people are not being forced into health and life compromising situations. So thank you for letting me do our station IDs and get that information out. So Catherine, it was in your conversation with the Attorney General that you became aware of the bill that was being put through to ensure this overseeing of pain management by the anesthesiologist. Is that correct?
Actually, it was, I had contacted the Anesthesiology Society of Oklahoma in April. I had no idea that they were working on that bill, that they had gone that far, because I had laid out what an anesthesiologist is, the program, type of program, certification and stuff that I had thought of and had been wanting to see come about for some time. And I decided in April that I'd give the Anesthesiology Society a call and see what they thought about it, and if they had been contacted by the Attorney General's office, and come to find out, absolutely. She sent me the bill right off the bat.
Wow.
In an email, you know. She just says, yeah, she says, right now they're voting on it.
That's some synchronicity right there.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. I was very excited.
That really is. Wow.
Know, yes, it is. To have an anesthesiologist, a rheumatologist, and a psychiatrist there, because, you know, the psychiatrist isn't there to make mental diagnosis. We, you know, you and I kind of talked about this. We don't want people thinking that that's what that is about. It's known that with this combination, that you do get a much better result, positive results with these certain combinations. And so that it will be titled for, a lot of them, they use anxiety.
Actually, I want to make another clarification, because we're broadcasting here out of upstate New York, Columbia, and Greene counties, and of course, live streaming around the world via our online platform, Wavefarm at wavefarm.org. Is that, excuse me, just dropped something. In New York State, our practice is a little bit different with regards to the psychiatric medicine. Now, we've talked about this before the show, is that in Oklahoma, the MDs are restricted from prescribing medications such as benzodiazepines, correct?
Correct.
And these are medicines that are sometimes used to control things like muscular spasms for a physical condition.
Yes, heart irregularities.
Yeah. So there's, when you're dealing with chronic pain and the systems in the body, a lot of times you're dealing with the muscular skeletal situation there. So dealing with the muscles through some of these chemicals that relax the muscles and the nervous system. For some patients, depending on their condition, it makes a big difference. If they can reduce these other symptoms, it helps to reduce their pain. So I think here in New York, it seemed to me that the MDs could prescribe them. Certainly had them offered before, but I don't have a condition that really responds to those. So fortunately, I'm very fortunate not to. But that is a difference between the two states. And one of the situations that complicates things here in the United States is how the laws do vary from state to state, but yet there's these common factors, such as the DEA regulations that just hit the country like a blanket. And I've seen in other states the situation with the psychiatrists like taken different directions, kind of depending on what is the thought process and the motivation behind the psychiatrists in practice. One state we were in, the current thought is that psychiatrists could teach you how to endure pain and become a yogi and not even feel it. And anyone can do this. You just have to go to pain school. Literally, they call it pain school. And I would say that of the team that we had to deal with at that point, which was a MD, supposed pain management specialist, a pharmacist, and a psychiatrist, the psychiatrist was absolutely the worst. I think we might have all gotten PTSD from having to deal with this psychiatrist because it was absolutely insane and Orwellian and defying all logic and reason. So I hope the situation in Oklahoma is as you're hoping that it will be, that the psychiatrists will be on board to make sure that the people with these medical conditions get the right combinations of medicines and the right doses that they need.
Yes, because also that irregular heartbeats as well, you know, that we know that pain causes, has also done damage.
Yeah, pain has a direct relationship to the heart.
Yeah, and you are not going to be able to, here in Oklahoma, you are not going to be able to go to an MD to get that medicine that will, such as like Ativan and Valium, is very good for regulating the heart rhythm, putting it right back. I mean, it works beautifully. And so to have that added into the clinic, you know, that that was very, very superb thinking.
Yeah. And I do want to get back to what you were talking about how, you know, we could work on some other legislation to help support this cause along. And we were talking before the show about maybe something like a law that if you're on a long-term medication, your doctor can't just cut you off of it cold turkey. And if you have to go to a different area or leave the doctor, or if your doctor's retiring, going out of business, whatever, they have to make sure that you're in the care of another physician that's going to continue the same treatment. It sounds, even though I'm not really a fan of new legislation per se, that sounds like a pretty good idea considering the structures that are in place right now and where we are in this process.
But there is states that already have those laws passed.
Okay.
Where it's absolutely illegal for them to do. And it's also supposed to be federally that if you're a disabled person, that is supposed to be unlawful to ever discharge or take away a disabled person's medicine.
You're not supposed to be able to. Do you know which states this applies to and where one might be able to access the information about that?
Let's see. Florida is one. I think, Florida's one. I think, Florida. I want to say Tennessee. The Carolinas, there's a lot of them, especially on the East Coast, that are like this.
In the Southeast, then.
I couldn't tell you which Florida, all of them are.
Okay.
I might have one time, they're federally, it has already been passed a law that states that they come up with defining what is addiction and what is pseudo addiction, and they have stated that in this federal law that went in January 2000 that addiction is where they acknowledge that there are chemicals that when introduced into the body that they will have a binding effect, that when that chemical is removed that it will cause adverse reaction as to what we call withdrawals.
Mm-hmm.
And they defined this as pseudo addiction.
They call it dependency.
Yes.
Because some people are dependent on their medicine. For example, those who rely on insulin.
Yeah.
And the same for those who rely on pain medicine. Because it's the same thing. Their health's going to decline without it.
Yes. Here's what they did with defining the pseudo addiction. And they stated that there are people who have these medicines that when they are taken off of this, that medicine, that there are going to be these adverse reactions. So these people are not addicts. Hmm. They define this as pseudo addiction and state that when a person when they have pain medicine, they're controlled. That pain is controlled. They become extroverts. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm almost verbatim reading this. Then they define what is addiction. Real addiction is a psychological addiction, whereas one person will go get their so-called drug of choice. Then they go into their habitat and they don't come out until they're ready until they need more.
Mm-hmm.
See, so we've already defined what a true pain patient is to the psychological ones. Sorry.
And I'd also like to say with the nature of addictions that the idea that just substances and the withdrawal symptoms constitute the addiction is really just a kind of erroneous and partial view of that addiction. For example, humans can be addicted to activities that have nothing to do with chemicals, that are not directly chemically altering them, except that maybe they enjoy it, like, for example, gambling or other kinds of social addictions.
You see, Heather, what the federal government did by passing that as a law, because it is in January 2000, is that they also have it in there that they cannot title a pain patient a Dr. Jumper. They cannot title you a drug addict.
So that was part of the federal law in 2000?
That's correct.
Now,
that's correct.
Here's the crux, though, is that there's this law, but yet these things are still happening. People are still getting cut off of their medicine, cold turkey. People are still going through these injustices and calling their authorities, but not having any recourse. But I agree with you that they should have that access of recourse. If a doctor's cutting a person off of their medicine that they need and they're going to be in agony and in withdrawals without it, then that, like we said before, this is violence and it does deserve the attention of law enforcement.
Well, I tell you what, Heather, I've had people that where I've talked about this law being passed here in Oklahoma, and I've had some backlash. People come back on me on this. I mean, just absolutely want to rip me in two over it. You know, that, oh, they can drive to an anesthesia. And I sit there, and I so relate with our government right now, because it seems like that here this is meant to help. This is work that we did. This was to help out. And it seems like so many people that they don't want to get in there, roll their sleeves up, and get active.
Mm-hmm.
Try to help.
Yeah.
Try to help. Get in there and help. Because I tell you, a lot of politicians are really getting burned out because, well, what do we see so often anymore? On social media, you know, it's always bashing the politicians, bashing them. And there is really, you don't see people talking about the good of what they're doing, you know. And so it's, this thing has made it become like it's them against us, you know.
Well, some of the politicians are working against the chronic pain community. But,
yeah,
you know, one of the things that's actually, it was just fairly recently even brought to my attention by a local politician, is that regular people have the means to submit new legislation. And,
absolutely.
And that was really an eye-opener for me, because I was like, you know, legislation, doesn't a legislator have to do that? But, you know, one of the things that I've been learning as an activist is that we really have power to start drafting up some of these ideas into bills and, you know, then going out and soliciting support for them. And, you know, the more support that is gained, and like if you can get something like an anesthesiology board on with it, you know, it just snowballs. And it can just start with one person, one spark, and then ignite into something that can really make a change.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I tell you, that's the most frustrating part is that we don't have people making phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
There's our advocate groups that really, all they are is just for people to come in there and complain, and you know, and they're really inactive. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to find an advocate, a true advocate group, an active advocate group in the state of Oklahoma,
mm-hmm,
who is willing to go to the state capitol with me.
Yeah.
Who is willing to make phone calls with me,
mm-hmm,
who is willing to do whatever it takes with me to get these laws passed, because I tell you, they're listening.
Yeah.
They're listening, because look at, mm-hmm, that was only one phone call that I made, and within 3 months, bam, it was a law. It was a law.
Have you experienced now pain management under this system where it's supervised by the anesthesiologist?
I haven't yet.
Sometimes they pass, but they don't go into effect until sometime
but
later.
Right now they're in, of course, getting everything set up.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Because it will come a time. There'll come a time where they're going to start cracking down. And go, okay, you've had this amount of time to be able to have an anesthesiologist over your,
mm-hmm,
pain clinic. You have, and it's where they can be heavily fined to the point of losing their license. And so right now, you know, it just went into effect back in May 1st. And so, you know, we're in the infancy stages of it. But, yeah, there are, as a matter of fact, there has been a couple of them that have been stopped, that they could no longer dispense pain medicine until they got an anesthesiologist. There has been a couple. I forgot about that.
Hmm.
Yes, there has been. So, yeah, they're getting it started. It's going.
And I'd be interested in, maybe in the future, we could follow up and see, you know, if the situation is improving there for chronic pain patients or people who were forced onto an insignificant amount of medicine, able to go and get on the right amount that they need to manage their pain and situations like that, because that's what we'd really like to see, is people getting treated.
Absolutely. I've been working on this since the 80s, trying to get pain management where it needed to be, and was afraid the direction that it was going to, and worked with people in the 90s to try to stop this train wreck that we knew was coming.
Yeah.
And we took some pretty good hits to where that we just didn't have enough public support with it, that basically went to the wayside. We just did not have the public support because the mindset at that time was, you know, they would never do this to us, you know, and it's like they're already doing it to us.
Yeah.
Oh no, you know, the government would never allow it to get like this, and unfortunately, yes, it did.
And many people have lost their lives already unfairly because they've been cut off of their medicine.
Yes.
And sometimes it's suicide, and sometimes it's cardiac arrest from the pain, but people have been dying due to this war on drugs. A lot of what's coming out now, whenever we've had a prohibition in this country, we always see it accompanied by very toxic chemicals. For example, paraquat that was sprayed on marijuana crops. Got a whole generation thinking that marijuana was actually dangerous. I mean, without naming anyone, there's actually a member of my family who, in that era, they were young, they smoked a joint and had to go to the hospital. And it got the whole family thinking, wow, joints are seriously dangerous. But when you look back at history now and realize, well, that was in the late 70s, you know, pretty obvious now to see what had happened. And that's not the effect of marijuana. Just like the way people are, I mean, I'm not denying that people are dying from a chemical that's out on the street. But again, this comes from the prohibition. You know, if people were able to get a hold of opium and go smoke it, well, you wouldn't have people catching AIDS from needles. You wouldn't have these problems associated with it. And people wouldn't be overdosing as much because they would know what they're getting. When things are legal, there's a certain quality control because, you know, if somebody was selling a hamburger that killed people, it would be pretty easy to go to the source and say, hey, there's something wrong with your hamburgers, or you're doing something wrong. But when something is illegal and it's coming through a criminal underworld, you don't have that kind of recourse. You can't necessarily trace the thing to its origin and ensure quality control.
You know, think about this for a minute. Just think about this just here for a minute. About this so-called this epidemic on the opiate epidemic on the streets that now they have taken in the streets and brought it into the doctor's office, saying that this is where it's come from. I want everybody to think about something for just a minute. Mm-hmm. I'm going to point something out here to you. Okay. A person only gets maybe 120 tablets. Okay. Now, supposedly that there is such an inflow of people going to the pharmacy and filling that little prescription, and then all of a sudden it turns into thousands and thousands upon thousands upon tens of thousands upon tablets in the street.
Right.
There is no way that people who go get the prescription can put that much amount of opiates on the street. That is not people. That is not coming from people selling their scripts. I promise you.
Right.
There is an underflow. There, you're talking about that these who are working behind the scenes that are taking it out of the manufacturings, and put it on the streets. Why? Because, one, they can make a lot of money on the black market selling their...
The black market, the prohibitions are wonderful for criminals. It's just such a money-making opportunity.
So, you know, any time that I hear somebody, anybody talk about, well, you know, it's people are selling their scripts, and it's like,
yeah,
no, that I promise you, that is not coming from people who are selling their scripts. You know, I even had somebody tell me, well, you know, that's because of people, they're hijacking the delivery, the pharmaceutical delivery trucks, the ones that go from, you know, to the pharmacies, you know, and give them their little bit of their medicines. I said, no, it is not from that.
How did those stay out of the headlines?
Yeah, well, I did research on it, and it was like, they're saying like one van per week, you know, through the entire country is, you know, getting hijacked. And it's like, that ain't putting the hundreds of thousands of pills on the street either, you know. It's obvious where it's coming from. Mm-hmm. It's not coming from people. And that's another thing that to present to the government, you know, is, you know, that isn't really it's not really common sense thinking. There's no way that people can put that amount of pills on the streets. It can't be done.
Mm-hmm. And if people had the access to go to their pharmacies and get the medicines directly, just like it was about 150 years ago, you could get your morphine at the drugstore, you could get your morphine cannabis solution at the drugstore, and the rate of addiction has really remained unchanged from then to now.
Yeah.
And people could get safe medicine. They didn't have to support a criminal underworld.
Yeah, they didn't. They really shouldn't have hydrocodone as a scheduled pain reliever. You should be able to go to the pharmacy and get hydrocodone.
Yeah, I think in most places it's over the counter.
Let your pharmacist, you know, mm-hmm. the pharmacy can keep track of it, you know.
Catherine, we've got about 3 minutes left to our show. Are there any resources you want to let our listeners know about in the last few minutes?
Resources?
Like websites for more research or organizations, anything you wanted to share with our listening audience before the end of our show? Well, I know you mentioned the Oklahoma Anesthesiology Society.
Yes.
In Oklahoma. You also mentioned trying to organize people in Oklahoma. Do you have an organization or a Facebook page or a website to share with our listeners?
There is, if you're in Oklahoma, there are some Oklahoma trigeminal neuralgia groups, advocacy groups that are here. Of course, there's pain coalitions, but I don't know any advocacy groups in Oklahoma that are gearing towards working with our legislation. Mm-hmm. I don't know any of them that are doing that. Like I said, that's a real problem.
I will share for our New York listeners that on Facebook, I have the Medical Freedom Advocates Group and Medical Freedom Advocates of New York. So I'm always looking for people who want to go up to the Capitol and do a demonstration or talk to lawmakers just to organize with locally here.
Yes. You know, go to your, even if you're near the Capitol, go in and meet these people.
Yeah, just
meet
talking
them face
to, them.
To face. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because you can go into a state capitol. You don't have to have an appointment. You can go in and speak with these lawmakers, with your mm-hmm. senators.
And right now it's even a good time to talk to people who are running for office. Like to get them aware before they even get in there. Catherine, we're almost out of time. I want to thank you again for joining me today. It's been wonderful talking with you.
And well, thank you I want for to, having
You're very welcome. I want to thank our listeners today for tuning in to Medical Freedom. This is your host, Heather Martin. I'll be back next month, second Monday of every month, 2 to 3 p.m. Tune in to Medical Freedom here on WGXA 90.7 FM. Okay, we have